Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to go back to the movies. Which movie are you talking about?
Well, Bub, let me tell you.
We're talking about Logan. And it is the swan song for Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. Well, for right now, until they offer him lots of money and he'll say, okay, I'll do the Deadpool movie. So you never know what could happen, but it was a bang to go out with. And we just had a great time to do it. And we've got a great crew to talk about it this week. Speaking of great crews, I have a great co-host to talk to this week. Welcome, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
Wait a minute. Howdy, Bub. How's that?
That's better.
Is my Hugh Jackman as good as yours?
Well, do we really want to go there?
No, we don't. No.
So, yeah, it was kind of sad, you know, seeing the movie and knowing this is, you know, it for the Wolverine character for now. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it and where they go with it. And we have a lot of fun ahead of us in this episode. As you know,
and we should point out, though, I mean, before we go any further, we should point out, if you haven't seen Logan, just stop right now. Go see it. Go run and go see it. Unless you're not of age. I mean, as long as you're an adult, you can get an R-rated movies, whatever. Go see it and then come back. And then, you know, we're here for you.
Well, that was one of the interesting things I found. Even at the movie theater I went to, they had signs right on the ticket office that, you know, this is a rated R superhero movie. It is not meant for little kids.
Well, they got to make that pretty clear these days because, you know, Deadpool opened up the door. So now we get more mature movies, but at the same time, we've got to, you know, that mentality that comics are just for kids. Comic movies are just for kids, et cetera, et cetera. We're always going to have that battle.
Well, the thing is, truthfully, you know, did you see little kids going to see Deadpool?
There were kids in the theater when I saw Deadpool, and there were a lot of kids in the theater when I saw Logan.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. I can honestly say, because we went to a 10:30 showing of it on Saturday morning, and all the kids were going to Lego Batman. Thank goodness.
Well, there were definitely more. When I saw Lego Batman, there were more kids in that theater, but there were still a lot of kids, a lot more kids than I thought, including screaming babies. So when I saw Logan, so that wasn't fun, but
that just doesn't make sense to me. What kind of parent? I know I'm going to get letters now. What kind of parent, you know, takes their kids to go see Logan? It's just,
let me ask you this. All right. Parent. Well, I mean, he's getting of age, but he still has to. Now, does William still need an adult to see Logan?
William looks like he's 23, dude.
But he's not.
No, he's 17.
So, right. So, but so he can go see Logan.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure he went either with his friend.
Wait a minute. Did you say how old he is?
William's 17, dude.
My God. My goodness. That's like when they say, you know, when they say that, wait a minute. So when Hugh Jackman first played Wolverine, that's when William was born.
Pretty much.
Because he's been playing this character for 17 years.
Yeah. William was already born when the first X-Men movie came out. And I went to go see it with my friend Dan. We took a break from watching the kid, left him with his mom. And we went to go see X-Men.
That's amazing.
I remember it like yesterday. It was just, it's crazy to think about.
It wasn't yesterday, sir.
No, it was not.
Wow.
It was the 90s. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's actually interesting if you think about it. It was the previous century when that movie came out.
It definitely was.
Wow.
It was a 20th century Fox production.
Literally and figuratively.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did like it. It was just amazing to see. But kids to go see that kind of movie, you know, when William was little, I had issues taking him to go see, and I'm going to be completely honest, folks, the third of the prequels, because I thought it was too violent and somewhat too gory in some parts. Because at the time, I think William was maybe six or seven when, you know, Revenge of the Sith came out. And I just didn't think it was appropriate for him. And of course, his mom took him. So it was okay. Oh, well. So, you know, that explains now so much about the kid. So it's perfect. But anyway, neither here nor there. It was an interesting, you know, week of stuff going on. We had a website that was down for most of the week. Headaches as hell, you know, true IT hell. And, you know, we have a lot of thanks to do, and we'll do that later in the show. But thank you for everyone who wrote me and, you know, on Facebook or email or even Twitter, you know, reporting that the website was down. I knew. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And of course, as we like to say, we'd like to hear from you guys, esopodcast@gmail.com, or of course, call us at 404-963-9057. I was actually shocked I didn't get any phone calls on there. So, but it was cool. So with that being said, I guess we've already been ranting and raving a little bit already. Let's just keep on going. What do you got for us, Mike?
Well, look, I mean, I know it's been a while, and we've done, you know, through the course of our Station One, we reviewed a lot of the X-Men movies. We were not around for the first X-Men movie, but we've covered, I think on episode 173, we covered 50 years of the Uncanny X-Men franchise. I know that, you know, both you and I are big comic fans. You know, the X-Men is a big part of comics as far as comic history and comic culture. I just, like, I was wondering what our personal experiences are. I mean, you can't read comics, certainly our age and after. You can't read comics and not have heard of the X-Men. Or not have bumped across them sometimes. Even if you weren't an avid collector of the X-Men comics, you still were aware of them because they were certainly in the late 70s and, well, 80s, certainly, they were the highest selling book. I mean, we talked about it in our Teen Titans episode where we covered the Titans, how the Titans, the new Titans, were kind of DC's answer or response to how popular the X-Men were.
Oh, exactly. It was interesting because, you know, the team of John Byrne and Chris Claremont, that was, for me, the golden age of the new X-Men.
So I wasn't reading them at that time. I was more of a DC guy and I like Spider-Man, but I never really, I mean, I like the X-Men, but I never really got like deep into them. But you were there from early on.
Oh, dude, you're going to kick yourself. I do kick myself still on this every day. Growing up, you know, being at the Grand Union grocery store, they used to have comics along with the magazines and everything. And I picked up a copy of Giant Size X-Men number one that was sitting right there. And I was looking through it. I loved what I saw. And I was like, Mom, can I get this? She says, no, it's 55 cents. I don't want to spend that much money on a comic. So I had to put it back, and to this day, biggest regret. But I probably went away a little bit from X-Men at that point until probably about a year later, and Dave Cockrum had already left the series, and I basically started collecting X-Men from that point on. I think it was the Starjammers episode, the one where they introduced them. and it was John Byrne's first issue because I had seen John Byrne and Chris Claremont work together on Iron Fist, of all things, at that time. And they took over X-Men, and I pretty much collected X-Men straight through probably about 10 years. And, you know, I was a huge fan. I collected the X-Men. I collected X-Force. I collected New Mutants, you know. So all the way through, and, you know, I stopped collecting X-Men around the time, like, Rob Liefeld era of New Mutants and the whole, you know, era there.
Like the Jim Lee stuff?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that just was...
So it was around, so yeah, so like mid-90s.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's when I gave up on X-Men. I kept, you know, touching base with them. You know, I picked up Wolverine when they first started his solo series. Anytime the X-Men appeared, I tried to pick up issues of it because I just thought it was all great stuff. And the stories were just amazing. And, you know, of course, at the time, I was able to go pick up back issues. And so I was able to pick up from X-Men 94 up, you know, at a comic shop, you know, for a couple bucks at the time. Later, it was worth hundreds of dollars. Hmm. But, you know, the one thing that always eluded me, though, was Giant Size X-Men number one. But I've read the story tons of times in trade paperbacks or, you know, in essentials, stuff like that. So it was pretty cool.
Did you watch the cartoon?
The first one I did. And because I was excited when the X-Men first appeared on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Because mm-hmm. I think that was the first time the new X-Men appeared on TV. Even before they had their own series.
And now at that time... I mean, that was the Wolverine that had the Australian accent.
Exactly.
Well, gotcha.
Technically, he does still, but, you know, he changes it around now.
That's true. He's played by an Australian actor, but I don't think he's got the accent.
No, I don't think so either. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I followed X-Men truthfully through all their, you know, incarnations for a while. And, you know, when Storm got the Mohawk and, you know, Kitty Pryde joined and, you know, all these things, they introduced Mystique and they introduced Rogue and, you know, because, you know, Rogue was a Avengers villain at first. And it was neat to see her try to join the X-Men. So it was just all the little things and everything. What about you, Mikey? When did you come into them?
I don't really consider that I have come into them. I have never read Uncanny X-Men with any sort of regularity. When I was growing up, as I said, I was a Spider-Man fan. So occasionally, you know, they would cross over. I do remember being very excited in Secret Wars number three. I think it's number three, where Spider-Man single-handedly beats the X-Men. I thought that was pretty awesome. Although X-Men fans probably hate that moment. But I, as a Spider-Man fan, I thought it was great. And, I mean, I think I picked them up because, you know, I picked up a couple books because obviously when Secret Wars 2 came out and I picked up every single crossover book that was tied to, sure, a couple of them were X books, but they just didn't seem like anything that, I could really, connect with. So, which is weird because X-Men is all about, you know, being able, like a bunch of mutants and that are trying to make it through the world and, you know, trying to reach out to like the, it should be reaching readers that feel disenfranchised. But I guess it just wasn't for me. A lot of the storytelling was maybe a little too convoluted. And certainly over time, it got to the point where I didn't feel like if you picked up an issue, you could understand anything that was going on without buying a bunch of more issues. And so I also wasn't a big fan of some of the artwork in the 90s. So like, yeah, I did stay away from the Lee Field and the Jim Lee stuff at that time because I didn't really that wasn't really where I liked my artwork. So those books were not really now. I did become, because of my love for Batman, I did become a Frank Miller fan. So I did pick up a copy eventually of Frank Miller and Chris Claremont's Wolverine graphic novel. And I thought that was pretty good. So I did have a connection with Wolverine more than any of the other X-Men. He's the one that I'm more familiar with. But I didn't watch the cartoon. It wasn't really until the movies, it wasn't until that first X-Men movie that I really, got into watching the X-Men with any regularity. And I haven't missed an X-Men movie in the theater since then. Sometimes I've regretted that, but, I do think, overall the X-Men movies have been, to my mind, pretty overall consistent. I think there was a big dip with X3 and like down and X-Men Origins, Wolverine. But I do think that it was raised up. Certainly X2, I really enjoyed a lot. I think that might be my favorite one, of the franchise of the X-Men movies. But First Class was definitely really cool too. I didn't even mind, Days of Future Past or Apocalypse. I thought those were kind of fun. I enjoy the franchise. I've always enjoyed Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine. To me, perfectly cast. So that's helped that. But it hasn't made me go back. And now, unfortunately, you know, the X-Men are there. But they're much more because of Marvel's weird relationship with 20th Century Fox, they've really downplayed the X-Men. I think they're definitely pushing the Inhumans more in the comics. So there's about four or five Inhumans titles, and there's probably only like two or three X-Men titles, where it used to be there was like 12 X-Men titles.
Oh, exactly. There was
completely. And Wolverine was on the cover of every one of them.
Well, hell, Wolverine used to be a member of the Avengers. He was the member of the X-Men. He was a member, yes. You know. So of X-Force, you know, you just had all these different, you know, comics, and Wolverine got around, buddy. That's all he could say.
The only X book that I ever read with any regularity was I really liked Exiles. Mm-hmm. It was a series that was written by Judd Winnick, and it was about a group of put together characters that were from multiple universes, different parallel universes. And they would jump around trying to they were kind of like sliders in a way, but it was done better. And I thought that was really good. I can't remember. The artist escapes me who did the art on that. But it's the same guy. Pat O'Leaf, I believe, was the artist on that. And I really that's where I grew to like his artwork a lot. And that series I followed from start to finish. I think it went about, I don't know if it went 100 issues, but it was close. And then I just kind of like, once that series ended, I kind of stopped. And I haven't really gone back and really done a lot of X-Men reading. So there's a lot of classic stories out there that I probably yet to read. I've read some of the big ones like God Loves, Man Kills.
Which is awesome.
And I've read... I haven't read Age of Apocalypse.
Have you read, like, of course, the Dark Phoenix saga?
I have not. Not the original, no.
Oh, dude. It's truly classic. And also, you know, if you want to go old X-Men 2, there's some great, you know, for X-Men, you know, they have, you know, of course, Days of Future Past, which they based the movie off of very loosely.
That I have read, yeah. Yes. Our good friend, the award-winning Bobby Nash, lent that to me, and I did read Days of Future Past. So mm-hmm. I did read that around the time of the movie because I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. So,
mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of different, you know, X-Men stories during that period. There's, you know, I can name tons even from the original series of X-Men where it was, you know, Stan and Jack doing it. And then later, of course, you had Neil Adams and Roy Thomas doing X-Men, which was just amazing stuff from that series. You know, it was just like, you know, the Savage Land stories or the return of Professor Xavier, because supposedly he died in the series. But, you know, it was another mutant that took its place. Shocker, you know, type thing. But, you know, there are a ton of great stories in there, you know, going through, you know, with the Brood storyline, you know, when the X-Men are captured and taken off planet by these creatures that almost look like alien. It was actually pretty cool, called the Brood. It was a great, great storyline.
I've heard of the Brood.
Yeah.
I've heard they're very alien-like.
Yep. And so there's tons of different ones. You know, the, was it Bill Sienkiewicz? How do you pronounce his last name? Sienkiewicz?
I think so, yeah.
Did an amazing run on the New Mutants.
So, I do remember thinking that that was, I do remember watching or like picking up that book a few times and checking out because visually it looked unlike anything I'd seen before.
It was like, it was like it nothing.
Yeah, it was this dark, stylized book that I was like, this is really unique. And it had that one character that just looked crazy. So it didn't look human. It would look like a pixelated cartoon character. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm.
Of course. It's she's like a robot type thing, but he's an alien.
I think maybe something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the, but
it's called Warlock.
Gotcha. Yes. That does sound right. Yes.
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 And so it's just, and it's interesting because there was all these different characters and just the artwork was just visually amazing, like nothing you ever saw. Sienkiewicz also did a great run on Moon Knight, if you ever get a chance.
I think I'm familiar with that as well, yeah.
So, you know, good stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just, like I said, I don't know where they stand now. I mean, for those people who want to check out the comics, I definitely encourage people to do so. I can't recommend personally any of the X books right now because I just don't know enough about them. Thanks to you, Mike, I did read the original miniseries of Old Man Logan, and it was okay.
I was going to say you didn't thank me for that when you gave.
Well,
it
no, I thought it was okay. It wasn't like it didn't. I wasn't like, oh my god, this is awesome. I thought it was all right. But I understand that that's continuing. I understand that Old Man Logan is a character now, and I think he's the only Logan that's in the MCU right now. And then Wolverine is actually X-23, who we know is X-23 that, you know, we'll see in we'll talk about in the movie Logan. But and I do think there was another character that I think was his son or something like that that was kind of going around with the Wolverine moniker for a while, but I can't remember much about him. He was in some of the crossovers that I read.
You don't want to read those. No.
Nope. But I do know that, like I said, if you pick up the Wolverine book now, I think it's all about X-23, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Exactly, and it's
who's not a little girl, by the way.
No,
she's at least a teenager, I think, in the book now.
Mm-hmm. I think she's even a little bit older than that.
And there is, like I said, an Old Man Logan story. So there's two. I think there's two Wolverine books that focus on the Wolverine characters. And then, of course, there are some X books still around. But I don't know what his role is in any of that stuff. So, maybe our listeners can tell us.
Please. We want to hear from you guys at home. Write us. What are your memories of the X characters? And we don't mean, like, ex-wives, ex-husbands, or whatever. We mean X-Men.
Or even X-Files.
Exactly.
But if there are some X-Men stories that I should read, since I'm fresh into it, or I still haven't read a lot of stuff, if there's some X-Men story, either classic or there's a title that you think, man, Mike, you really need to read this right now, let me know, because I like experiencing new stuff and I'm not opposed to it. So just hit me up and let me know what I should be reading.
That sounds perfect. Definitely want to hear from you guys. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
The White Rocket Podcast, hosted by Van Allen Plexico, covering the entire universe of popular culture, movies, TV, books, comics, music, and more, with interviews, convention panels, discussions about current and classical works, and much more. The White Rocket Podcast. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture.
This is Ashley Pauls with this week's What to Watch. Hopefully all of you got a chance to get to the theaters this weekend to see the new X-Men movie, Logan. This one did about $90 million at the box office, which is just huge for a movie this time of year, especially an R-rated superhero movie. And on top of that, it was just an all-around great film. This is a really good way for Hugh Jackman to leave the character, since he's going to be retiring from Wolverine after this movie. If you didn't get a chance to see it, I would highly recommend it. As for new releases, we actually don't have a lot of wide releases hitting theaters this weekend. We've got a scattering of limited release films, smaller films that may or may not be in your local theater. But the big one we definitely want to talk about is Kong Skull Island. King Kong has been around Hollywood for a long time. We've seen many reincarnations, remakes, reimaginings of this character. And as you know, some have been more successful than others. However, the good news is this one, Kong Skull Island, looks like it's a really fun take on the character. Based on what I'm hearing from critics so far is that this movie's not really going to break any new ground in terms of plot. It's not necessarily going to wow you with its groundbreaking narrative. But you know what? Sometimes all you need is an action-packed popcorn movie. That's just a good time at the theaters, and that looks exactly like what this is. It's got a good cast, including Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson, and Tom Hiddleston, and plenty of great King Kong special effects. That's actually one of the things that kind of disappointed me about the recent Godzilla movie, is that we didn't get to see as much Godzilla as I was hoping. But I think we'll see plenty of King Kong here, and again, great special effects. So this is definitely looks like a good one that you want to catch in theaters and maybe even IMAX. As for what's coming out new on DVD this week, we've got Disney's animated musical Moana, which is a fun one that you might want to catch as a good family film. We've also got Jackie, which stars Natalie Portman as First Lady Jackie Kennedy. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll listen again next week, where we're going to be talking about Disney's much-anticipated live-action adaptation of the musical Beauty and the Beast.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for our Geek Seat segment, and we are here with Buddy, and he is going to talk to us all about Jolanta. That's coming up this weekend, of course, but he is also going to take a shot at seeing if he could beat the Geek Seat.
Yes, well, and you know, the newly christened Toylanta, right?
Toylanta. Yeah, we've expanded our definition to such an extent in the last few years that it was just a natural move to take it to Toylanta. Although Jolanta will always be our, you know, our core, our spine. Toylanta is more encompassing of the depth and breadth of the kind of toy culture that we're really drawing these days. I mean, we topped out 1,500 last year. We're expecting well over 2,000 this year. And we've broken every record we've got in pre-sales of dealers' tables and pre-sales of packages and pre-sales of hotel rooms. So I would guess we're gonna be a very excited packed room on the 11th and 12th.
So excited for what's going to happen this weekend. It's definitely turned out to be one of our favorite events to go to, and it has grown so much in such a relatively short time, I think. And I know you've been there since the beginning. I mean, we've had Martin on, but you were there, I think, prior to that, correct?
I started Jolanta in 2000. And after I'd been working with the National G.I. Joe Club for several years and working with them and Hasbro on collector's editions of G.I. Joes. And there were just so many local cats that were never going to get to experience that kind of connectivity that it just seemed like a natural to have a local event. And I ran it by myself with my friends and family for probably 10 years. And then we created the Cody Lane Foundation and turned it over to the board of directors. It's a 501c3 charity. with the goal of opening a toy and diorama museum in Atlanta. So for the last several years, it's been me and several of the board of directors and Martin as our emissary, really growing it into this vision that we've always had of a creator-based toy show, where it's not just a bunch of cats swapping stuff in a hallway and smelling the dirty socks. You know, it really has been the objective of getting people who make toys, love toys, collect toys, people that are in the industry, people that want to be in the industry, or people that are just using it as an art form, which really it is an art form. It's a great way of communicating. And there's such an instant connectivity between toy collectors that it's just spiraled into a gestalt that we are completely excited about seeing the evolution of, because it's everybody, there's just such a love in that room. Everybody's welcome. Everybody is a family member you haven't met. And there's so much stuff, man. If there's an artifact you're looking for in the toy gig, it's there.
Absolutely. It's really, whether you're a diehard, like you said, you're a collector, you've been a collector for decades, and or you're into the customizing of them. It's definitely a lot of programming, a lot of content at this show for you. But also for those people who just like to look at toys or want a little bit of visit, a little bit of nostalgia, I mean, boy, you're going to be hit right in the face with it.
Absolutely. Well, what I'm most excited about is how well our panels have taken off. And you guys are doing the Mego panel right on Saturday.
We are all doing the Mego panel, sir.
Well, I'm doing it with you. I'm sort of a ghost. I haunt all the halls, but I'll be there in person in that one. And Mego is one of those unexplored territories for a lot of people who've been into toy collecting in the modern era, but so many people forget that Mego was the cutting edge of property acquisition back in the 70s. Those cats were grabbing everything.
Absolutely.
And they were, I do honestly believe that Mego set the pace for what happened later on in the toy industry in general, of properties being such a backbone of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I do remember, I mean, I'm young enough to, I got the, my first one, I think, was a G.I. Joe, is it the 12 inches, and then I got, you know, the Big Jim and the $6 Million Man and all that, but I can remember making the transition to Mego's, and that was, you know, about a decade of those.
And that's all there was at one point. I mean, G.I. Joe phased out.
Yep.
And Mego ruled the territory for about 2 years until Star Wars stomped in.
Right.
But people forget that the 12-inch Mego line was incredible. It was a phenomenal line. I mean, the magnetic hands, Batman and Robin. You had the Hulk, which is, I'll put that up against any action figure built today. It was a great comic-based rendering of the Hulk in almost full articulation.
Guys, you might want to wait that for our panel on Saturday.
Oh.
Are we getting too deep?
There's so far to go with that. You're right. Rein me in, sir. Rein me in.
I just saw you going down a path and, you know,
a rabbit hole.
We do want people to come to the panel, but we're also doing that panel live so we can actually record it for the podcast in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Well,
Our listeners will consider that a preview of that episode. So, So in addition to our wonderful Mego panel that people can we'll get a chance to see at Saturday at 4 o'clock, what are some of the other highlights this year?
We've got a lot of great, amazing artists joining us. We've got Derek Yaniger, a great pop culture artist and a tiki favorite of mine.
I dig his work.
He is phenomenal. And we have Mark Wright will be joining us. He's a perennial guest with us. He does amazing renderings of pop culture stuff. I think that Larry Hammond is joining us again. And Larry is the creator of G.I. Joe Real American Hero, all the archetypical characters. And Larry is a phenomenal guest and so giving and connecting with the public that if you are a real American Hero aficionado, he will talk with you as long as you want to talk, because he really is there because he loves the fans. We've got a film festival that we do every year. That's a huge panel for us at night. We have toy filmmakers from all over the world. Last year's winner was a Chinese gentleman. I think that just technology has made filmmaking a new art form over and above what it was. It's made it so accessible to everybody. We have Phantom Troublemaker. We'll be doing a toy panel on how people played with their toys, not just blowing them up as I brought up with him, but you know, how they interconnected their toys together and things like that. And many other panels. I know we have a Super Joe panel, which is the unsung swan song of the vintage era of G.I. Joe. And that's with our friend Steve Stovall from Louisville, Kentucky. Steve is the premier Super Joe collector in the country and is probably single-handedly responsible for this recent upsurge in interest in Super Joe. And, of course, the Defenders of Bullet Man will be roaming around doing the stuff that they do, which is almost indescribable and indecipherable. we have EJ's Lobby Swap Thursday. This year it's two nights, Thursday and Friday night, where anybody can just bring their stuff in and swap, trade, commune with their fellow guests at in the lobby. On Friday night, we have a parachute drop, which is our signature event.
Awesome.
People
it's so
just
fun.
Go, you know, dozens of floors up and start tossing parachutes off. And it is exciting to see a 50-year-old have the same excitement level as a 12-year-old when they see those parachutes.
You never know where they're going to go.
You have no idea. I have seen many go down that elevator shaft.
Oh, yes.
It's like a search and rescue off of Baywatch to see people scramble for those damn things. You'd think Pamela Anderson was down there. But that's just a small sampling of everything that's going on there. And the true stars of our show is everybody coming in to interconnect with each other, because that's really the reward. You know, our board works hundreds of hours a year to put this on, and our true reward is seeing people connect with each other, have fun, build relationships that go far beyond that moment, and really figure out that we're all in the sandbox together. You know, when you're devoted to something, connecting with people that are similarly, you know, bent, it's kind of a rarity, maybe, and especially people as rabid as toy collectors, because it is a rabid. There's so many permutations of toy collectors, and people want that kind of reinforcement that, hey, what I'm doing is a valid pursuit of my time. And it is, because you know, pop culture has become culture at large, and toys are a direct reflection of what's going on in pop culture. I think there's not a property, hell, there's properties that don't even exist that have toys. You know, there's so many toy lines out there, and I encourage the more the merrier, because even if it's a Kickstarter toy, to me, it's a valid toy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we definitely encourage people to come out next weekend and check out Toylanta. Of course, you can go to the website, and we'll have links to that on our show notes. But right now, it's time. The geek seat hungers, buddy, and I'm sorry, but it's your time, my friend.
That's a vicious-looking chair you got there, Mike. I don't think I've ever quite seen that clash of colors, man. Wiring coming off of that thing? I think it is.
You'll feel it in a few minutes. You'll know what it is.
Just like my first marriage. All right. Well, I'm getting
coming. Dude, at least you'll see this one coming, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah. There was no way to predict that one. It's a comfy geek seat. You guys just had this thing reupholstered or something, right?
Well, we had to, because the blood was soaking through the old stuff.
Absolutely.
All right, Mr. Mike, tie him down.
He is secure.
All right.
These are kind of tight, but I'll deal with it.
Are you ready for your first question, sir?
I am.
What is your favorite geek out moment?
Personally, my favorite geek out moment was watching amateur G.I. Joe films with Bernie Wrightson at Adam Hughes' house and not losing my mind. That was a geek out moment for me. Bernie Wrightson was my hero from the time I was just a tadpole. And, you know, he was such a vibrant cat, you know, on the scene when, all through my youth, that to sit there and he was more interested in what we were interested in. And Adam has always been a supporter of Joe Lana and had just made a fan film. So we were sitting there watching a G.I. Joe fan film. And Bernie looked at me oddly for a second. Then I thought to myself, well, this is a guy who portrays people getting beheaded on a regular basis. I guess everything's cool.
I could totally understand that one.
Absolutely.
What's your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
Chekhov losing his mind with a fan at DragonCon. That was kind of disappointing. It was a little bit sad. He was obviously a tired man at that point. Don't hold any moments against anybody. But when you have fandom of any sort, you gotta realize you're on stage the whole time. You know, I am not a celebrity by any means, but I do have fans. And anybody who cares enough to give you their energy deserves equal, if not more, and in my opinion, more energy back, you know. And so you have to be very considerate of other human beings, regardless of status of life.
Oh, sure. That totally makes sense. No, it's basically you should be on 24/5 at DragonCon. Be prepared for it.
Absolutely. It's something else. That's an amazing mass of humanity at one time.
What geeks you out the most, though?
Creativity geeks me out the most. Seeing people actually aspire to putting those neurons together and creating something new. Even though there may never be anything new under the sun again, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, but to see somebody try for the first time to learn something new and express themselves with it, I think is phenomenal.
Oh, sure. That totally makes sense. What turns your geek off, though?
What turns my geek off? Condescension.
I don't property... know what you mean. What?
What? I don't either, sir.
Why, I never.
When a property, an intellectual property or a creative property or the creator of said property or even just rude people, you know, fail to treat others with the respect that they deserve, you know, and that's a story talking down to you or being given some stupid pablum that really doesn't measure up. You know, humanity is not as stupid as some people think it is, you know, and so that is the one thing that really turns me off in geek culture is when somebody or something talks down to others.
It's one of the worst things in the world. It's like, yes, I'm better than you, and I'm going to talk to you that way.
Well, especially when it's somebody who's not treated famously in any other context than the one they're in, and then all of a sudden they're putting on airs, as we'd say back in Possum Kingdom. That boy needs a little deflating, I think.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
What fictional character would I like to meet the most? Probably Sherlock Holmes.
Nice.
You know, I mean,
which version of him, though?
Well, it'd have to be Cumberbatch, of course. The guy is great at everything he does. He could read the phone book, and it'd be interesting.
Well, true. Very true there.
Absolutely.
All right. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Sherlock Holmes, probably, because he'd dissect me. I wouldn't stand a chance.
No, I totally understand that he'd have you figured out before you even walked through the door.
You are a fraud, sir. Your untied shoes tell me so.
And I can tell what you've done today by just looking at the food on your shirt.
That's right. It's an archaeological dig, my friend, of buffets all across the Southeast.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Engage is a one word that you can just utter it and everybody knows exactly where you're coming from. So just like get to it, put the pedal to the metal, so engage.
That is awesome. You know? That is awesome. What is your ideal geek occupation?
The one I have, the creator.
Okay. Being the creator of all things. Got it.
I've spent the last 30 years in intellectual property development for brands. And, a lifetime of being an overgrown child prepared me completely for this job. So, I was the art director for Mellow Mushroom for 30 years. I did work for Coke. I did work for Frito-Lay. I did work with The Grateful Dead through Relics magazine. So I can't really imagine any other geek occupation that would have given me that opportunity. You know, it's been an interesting ride.
Or what a long, strange trip it's been.
A long, strange trip, brother. I met Jerry backstage at Nassau Coliseum in 89.
Oh, and dude.
It was when Tim Truman was working on Grateful Dead comics. I don't know if either one of you guys saw those.
Oh, of course.
Fantastic.
Still have my collection.
I thought I was a shoo-in. Jerry was the nicest letdown I ever had, probably. He let me down like a pro, man. Almost as good as Ricky Zero.
Wow.
Ricky can bring you back to Earth quick and not even let you know it.
What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
Any of the guys on the wrong side of Doctor Who.
You never have a chance there.
Oh, there's no way, man. Half those guys ends up with their heads off, so, you know.
Good point. That is a very good point. Are you ready for your final question, buddy?
Yes, sir. Fire away.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Well, one that is shareable with the public is cross-pollinated creativity. Basically, taking any kind of storytelling vehicle as far as it can go with story, art, music, toys, anything like that. I got very close to that in my last job. Didn't quite get the toy end of things made, though we were in development with Lego. And that was a phenomenal project that almost happened. And I really missed that one. But, you know, in one iteration or another, I've done toys. I've done art. I've done, you know, worked with musicians. I've helped develop intellectual properties, written intellectual properties. And to be able to do all those things at one time, that's the ultimate geek fantasy.
That is awesome, sir.
Thank you.
Congratulations, though, buddy. You have made it through the geek seat.
All right. You guys have something to get my blood moving from these straps? Holy smokes, man.
You're not going anywhere.
Are they supposed to turn blue like that?
The straps or your arms?
Just the first of many colors.
Absolutely.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
Well, buddy, you have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $14.02.
My folks will be so proud.
Sure they will. Where can we find you online? Because we know we can find you definitely at Toylanda this weekend, but where can people reach you online?
People can connect with me on my Facebook page, Buddy Finethy, FINETHY, spelled like fine thy. And they can also see my design company at Arcadis Design Group on Facebook. JoeBud01 at gmail.com. Anybody's got any questions, just pop them in there. Toylana is going on this weekend, March 11th and 12th, 2017, at the Marriott Century Center, Claremont Road, 985 in Atlanta, Georgia. Free parking. The best time you haven't had if you haven't been. It's an amazing group of people, and I will guarantee you will have the time of your life.
Absolutely, and we will see you all there, and we'll see you there too, buddy.
Absolutely, me and the Possum Kingdom Ramblers.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Y'all take care. Thanks for having me on so much.
Charles, the world is not the same as it was. Mutants. They're gone now.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
Where is she?
Beneath the stains.
She's like you.
Of time.
Very much like you.
The feelings disappear.
She needs our help.
You are
someone to come along.
Someone has come along.
I am still right here. And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt. I will keep myself. I would find a way.
Logan, you still have time.
All right, folks, it's time for our next movie review. Can you believe it? Two movie reviews in a month almost. And now we're, you know, actually, if you think about it, there's going to be another one next week. Gosh, it almost feels like summertime or something.
It kind of does.
You know, it's just like all these huge movies coming out. And it's not like Hollywood's giving us a break any longer. And this one was so epic. It was... For me, it felt like this could have been, you know, I don't think it would have been a good summer movie because, yeah, it's a superhero movie, but it's more than that.
It's dark. It's a drama.
Yeah, it's a true drama. And I think Jennifer hit it right off the head. And, you know, I think we're going to talk all about Logan tonight. And this was a lot different than I was expecting. People were saying it was going to be. And I stayed away from spoilers big time on this one. And... we're going to talk all about it. So we're going to spoil it for you instead. So we got a great crew. Of course, we have our movie gal, Ashley. Welcome.
Hello. It's nice to be back.
Yes. And, you know, we can't really talk about movies without you being here unless you're on your honeymoon or something, you know?
That's right. So hopefully I won't have any more excuses like that. So I should be here for all the summer, all the fun summer stuff.
Knock on wood.
Yes. Yes.
So that is awesome. It's great to have you. And of course, we have the lovely Jennifer Hartshorn, who's our Marvel lady.
Hello, Marvel Universe.
Yes, the MCU diva. No, I don't like that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But guru, how about that?
Guru? I can live with that.
MCU guru. It's sort of, you know, the you and the you and the...
And the you and the you and the you.
And the me.
And exactly. Me. That's right. So also, we are joined, returning to the show, Jay Scherer's with us. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I feel like I'm kind of like your left coast correspondent over here,
you know,
in California.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with that. We had a deadhead in the geek seat, so why not have somebody else from the left coast, you know?
There you go.
So I think that's pretty awesome. So right off the bat, this is completely different than any of the other two Wolverine movies we saw. Hell, it's different than any of the X-Men movies even. This, you know, is the first one of the Marvel movies other than Deadpool that got a rated R. And I think they took full, you know, full advantage of it. And I think they knocked it out of the ballpark.
I think that with this subject matter, you kind of had to do rated R. I mean, it was at the, you know, even if you put aside the language, this was going to have a lot of violence in it, just as an important thing to tell the story. So I think this is, well, much like Deadpool, where, you know, where we said, you know, that's something where you could make a PG-13 version of it, but it wouldn't have the same feel.
No, this
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an important point too, because look, the Deadpool comics are not R-rated. So anybody can pick up the Deadpool comics, and they're not for itty bitty kids, but they're they're not explicit. Not as explicit as the movie is, but the movie does break down some barriers. And I think it's important that, look, a lot of the studios looked at the success of Deadpool and were like, hey, we now all superhero movies should be R, et cetera, whatever. But right. But it did allow, I think, the door to be open to tell a Wolverine story that we've been wanting to see for a while, because a lot of the serious Wolverine stories, starting with that first graphic novel that Claremont and Frank Miller did, like, was really kind of pushing it at the time. So mm-hmm. I think Wolverine's that kind of guy. When we saw in X-Men 2, when we see his rampage in the mansion, mm-hmm. we're like, we want more of that. and even in the other movies, he adds a little bit of, like, you know, he puts the 13 in the PG-13 of all the X-Men movies, you know? So I think it was just a great way that, yes, Deadpool opened the door for that, but then we get something completely different than Deadpool, but yet I think a very serious and very, very intense and brutal story.
I think what a way for Hugh Jackman to kind of end his Wolverine legacy on such a strong note. I appreciated that they were willing to let it be darker and grittier. And I heard he took, I don't know if this is just a rumor or not, but a pay cut so they could do the R rating. And I think it just really allowed him to dive really deep into the character and, you know, to kind of take it to a grittier, darker place. And I think it's a really satisfying kind of ending and wrap up to his whole legacy as this character that he's been playing for, what, like almost 20 years now.
Oh, man, that makes me feel old.
Well, especially because Ashley was in elementary school then, so.
I actually think, too, in the violence in this movie is actually almost better utilized than the violence was in the Deadpool film. In my opinion, because it goes along with the tone of this movie really, really well. Whereas I understand Deadpool's more of like a grown up cartoon, but this one we got to see Wolverine utilize his skills in a way that we had not seen before. That is very apparent even in the PG-13 comics. Right.
One of the things that struck me about this one is that, you know, there are different kinds of things that you can get the R rating for. And, you know, with Deadpool, you had a movie that had a lot of violence, but it was, I don't want to say it was silly violence, but, and this is kind of hard to articulate, but it was, you know, it's like, ah, that guy got his head chopped off. That's, you know, with this, it was very, I don't want to keep using the word gritty, but it was very real. It was very visceral. There was a lot of, for me, this was difficult to watch because there was a lot of pain. It wasn't just, you know, lots of blood and smashing stuff. There were, if somebody got hurt, they were screaming in pain. And that is, you know, that's a whole other level of violence and upsetting content compared to Deadpool where it's kind of played for laughs.
Well, and plus you've got two characters that the main two characters, when they do commit the violence, mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable to watch. It's not like, you know, we saw Hugh Jackman and Wolverine in his prime. Like I said, in X2, there's this sort of like he's defending the manor and he's, you know, he's going berserk on all the agents that are, you know, mm-hmm. trying to abduct the kids. I mean, this is just random. Some of this, certainly the beginning, the opening scene is just senseless violence that he doesn't want to do. He's too old to do. It's painful for him to do. So you've got that part of it. And then you've got the girl, which is just really uncomfortable to watch when she starts attacking people quite violently, that it's a different level of violence.
Something that they had in two different places. I think there was one with him and one with her that just like really, really stuck with me and really like burned itself onto my psyche was, you know, when you have somebody like this that has, you know, healing factor and that is ridiculously tough, you have to come up with different ways of trying to put them down. And two different times in the movie, they had them get basically stuck with a spear on a wire. Yep. That was like basically so that you could drag them back. And that was just looked so agonizingly painful. And it's like you can't, you know, with someone with healing factor, if you just keep beating on them, they'll just keep getting back up. But when you like physically control their movements to yank them back like that, whoa, that's we're not in PG-13 territory with something like that.
Mm-mm. You saw that with especially the clone or whatever it was, X-24. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you saw, you know, for every single thing that they were doing to it, it was healing itself mm-hmm. right away. And right. It was amazing to see because that's the way Wolverine used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't expecting that to be Wolverine or Logan. I expected mm-hmm. it to be like a hybrid of all the different powers
mm-hmm.
and such.
Now, I haven't read... You know, I've read some Wolverine stories. I'm not a huge, huge X-Men comic fan. So I haven't there's, you know, obviously I haven't read all that stuff. But I've read some works and including the most recent Old Man Logan story that got acclaim a couple years ago, which I think this might have served some sort of inspiration for, although it's not by no means a direct
not at all
adaptation,
nowhere close.
The only thing that they have in common is that they take place in the future. Logan is old and the X-Men are dead. And I do have to say, I'm not entirely, and this is to the movie's credit, but I mean it's a thing with me, I'm not entirely comfortable with stories that depict my heroes as being dead mm-hmm. or failing. So futuristic stories like this, I mean, there's a little bit of that goes on in Dark Knight Returns. There's obviously some of that goes on in the Old Man Logan story, but in this, obviously the X-Men are dead. So these are the only surviving mutants that we know of. And that's really depressing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, it's hardcore. There's a little bit of hope in the movie, obviously, at the end, but it's Charles is the one who's responsible for our heroes dying. It's even more of it's an uncomfortable feeling, but it works so well in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really emotional experience just to kind of see these characters that we've loved and gotten to know since the first movie. And we've seen them like being strong, like you said, and fighting the bad guys. But now we see them like weakened, they're vulnerable, and they're the last of their kind. And it's just, it's very sad. Like, it's hard to see Professor X, you know, kind of barely clinging to his former powers. And it was just really hard to see like him struggling like that. And then just to kind of see him die, not in a moment of triumph or
sacrificing
him. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. He was killed in the action. So that was just really hard to see, like, this is the end. And then, like, especially with the ending of the movie, it's not necessarily even wrapped up. Like, it's uncertain. Do the kids actually get to the refuge? Is there a refuge? So this was kind of, I was surprised by just how melancholy the movie was.
Well, I think that they definitely, I also stayed away from spoilers and anything like that. But I think anybody who saw the trailer in the movie theater that was set to Hurt by the Johnny Cash version, that for me, that made it pretty clear what the tone of the movie was going to be.
It was not going to be a happy movie.
It was not going to be a happy movie. It was going to be about pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing the connections with Cash, because not only do you have that a really effective trailer, but of course the end credits has a Johnny Cash tune. The marketing was really like using the same font really as the Cash's later albums and all that. Like there was this really kind of strong, and also the fact that, you know, with the Western, there's obviously Shane, you know, is a big part of this movie. I also think it has, you know, it remind, like, more when I was thinking about it too, it reminds me of kind of how I felt about Unforgiven. Unforgiven was for Westerns, this is kind of for superhero movies.
Yeah, I could see that. I definitely could see that. This, you know, raised the bar quite a bit for superhero movies. It, you know, you saw a future. It wasn't basic. It wasn't, you know, apocalyptic. It was a continuation of where we are today. And I did like that it wasn't inundated with all this futuristic stuff. They had minor little hints and such, but they didn't have, you know, you flooded with all these new technologies. Look, Marty, flying cars.
Right.
You know, so you didn't have that. You had, you know, the trucks that drove by themselves. You had, you know, maybe a little more souped
up. The Reavers.
Well, the Reavers and all the, you know, all the bad guys had metal arms and robot arms.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was interesting. And just to see that it wasn't, you know, super futuristic, it was something that you could possibly imagine being, you know, happening. It was, you know, you had the border wall. Go figure.
Yeah.
We're not going to even go onto that one.
I think it was 2029, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's only 12 years.
I mean, that's not, yeah, exactly. That's not that far in the future. And those are all things that are plausible. You know, they're a little bit out there, but they're, you know, it's not, you know, crazy future tech kind of stuff.
No, the bad guys didn't have laser beams or anything like that. You know, so
they didn't have robot arms, but, you know.
Robot arms, but they have robot arms now that they're experimenting with. It was all technologies that were realistic.
Well, and they're really toned down from the Reavers in the comics. I mean, the Reavers in the comics are really kind of like, it's kind of like Marvel's answer to the Borg.
Right.
Oh, exactly. So. And I love the surprise of seeing Caliban. In the
now, was it the same actor?
No.
That played him in the Apocalypse?
No.
Okay.
No, I actually like this one a lot more than I liked the one in Apocalypse.
If I'm not mistaken, it was Stephen Merchant, and he's actually a comedian and hilarious.
And
so to see him in this role, see him in this role was like really surprising, actually, because he really stretched himself in terms of what I've seen him in before.
Yeah, in Apocalypse, it was Tomas Lamarque, I think, but totally different actor.
Gotcha. I you know, obviously, if you've seen the other X-Men movies, the other Wolverine movies, there's a little bit that you can, you know, add with your history to him, but I don't even think it's necessary. I mean, they reference things, but not in a way that you are like totally lost.
Yeah. And that was an interesting thing that somebody brought up on a Facebook group. I think it was today, actually. They were saying, you know, I have a friend who wants to see this, but he's – or who I want to take to see this, but he says that he doesn't think he should because he doesn't know the X-Men universe at all. So would he be able to see this? And what I said was, the only thing that I think is important that is not explicitly spelled out is to know going into it just how powerful Charles is. And and the repercussions of, you know, if he lost it, you know, how bad would that be? And I think that's the only, you know, history thing that you would really need to know, because everything else is pretty much presented.
No, that's very true, because you don't need to know anything about Wolverine to do this.
No.
You don't need to know anything about any of the other X-Men. You don't need to really know anything about even the past history of the Marvel Universe at all. Because, you know, they pretty much tie it all together there.
And it's unusual for a Marvel, and obviously this is not a Marvel Studios film, this is a Fox Marvel film, but I went out looking for, you know, things where people listed off Easter eggs and things like that, and they're really few and far between in this. It's not, you know, just brimming with lots of references to things. You know, it's things like, oh, well, they used this name that was a minor character in Wolverine Origins, or you see a samurai sword on the wall, which is a reference to this. It's not like, you know, some movies where you've got, you know, just packed with Easter eggs. It is very much a standalone movie that there are little touches here and there, but it's not something where you're going to miss anything if you don't know the full story.
I love that all the kids had their own powers, but they didn't, you know, copy all the X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
And because I would have been really like, oh, please, come on. That's not going
to be. Well, they kind of set it up that they were doing that, though.
Oh, they're going
to. They were making X-Men.
They are making X-Men, but they were trying to make weaponized X-Men is what the plot was for the bad guys.
Right.
Right. But it's the fact that it was like, I think a Latina girl that had Iceman's powers, you know, they were not, yeah. they were doing very different characters, not just knockoffs of the existing characters.
Well, it seemed to me that they were more interested in replicating the procedures and powers on anybody so that they could take that and sell it rather than actually develop soldiers out of these kids. Which was really kind of like, I didn't think they were making the kids into soldiers. I think they were just using them to show that they could do that with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, the kids were lab rats. You know, yes. they were being used to develop the technology, not necessarily to make them, because at the point where the nurse got the girl out, they had basically said, okay, we're going to shut down and basically, you know, delete all the experiments. Yes. So they were not doing this to raise those specific kids as an army. It was to perfect the technology.
Yeah.
And at least that was my reading of it.
Yeah. And even the doctor there was like, don't think of them as – they're not people.
Right.
I'm like – it was that. I mean, it's really disturbing. I think, you know, and boy, I don't think I can say enough good things about young Daphne Keene.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She blew the movie away. She was just awesome from the opening scene when you see her in the car to the final scene at the gravesite where she took the cross. Oh. The cross and made it into an X. And it was she was wonderful, and the stunts that she did and the fighting and just the characterization and just being able to capture it all was just it was awesome.
I was just really impressed that a 10-ish-year-old kid could do like a film of this depth and kind of seriousness, because this isn't a fun, lighthearted role. So that the that she was able to kind of express kind of this darkness, the tragedy of the character, and just the incredible intensity during those fight scenes was just amazing. I'm curious to see what else she's going to be in now that she's done this.
And doing that with so little dialogue too.
Yes.
That's just another layer of difficulty on top of that too.
Well, you could read her so well.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. Just the looks on her face, her expressions were, she stole the movie truthfully for me. She, you know, Hugh Jackman was great. And of course, you know, Professor Xavier,
Patrick Stewart. Yeah.
He was just awesome. But she won me over. And, you know, I read a couple of the comics with her character in it, because, mm-hmm. folks, little spoilers, she is Wolverine now in the comics. And so it's just, you know, neat to see a young girl playing that role.
Mm-hmm.
And they captured it really well.
Can you imagine being 10 and them asking you to have Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart as your co-stars?
You'd probably be like, who are they?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, what it reminded me of a little bit actually was Kirsten Dunst's first big role, yes, playing, yeah, Claudia in Interview with the Vampire, up against, you know, Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise.
Mm. Yeah, they just don't know anything. I think like I said, she did a great job, and you can sort of, it's difficult to get, you know, performances like that out of kids, and especially when it's, you know, you have to put them, you know, the kids are depicting things that are not very, you know, fun and kid friendly, and mm-hmm. And yet she managed to pull it off. And the other kids, you can kind of just compare her just to the other kids in the movie. Like, nobody really sells it like she does. Like, the other kids are there and they're great, but you don't really make a strong connection with any of them. And that's not what the movie's about. So I'm not mm-hmm. criticizing that, but I'm just saying, as far as acting performances from children, it's difficult to get this kind of performance. And yeah, she's really special.
No, she's going to have a big future. I just feel it. Because if this, you know, her role, she could definitely win Best Supporting Actress for this role.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is really, really interesting, is that, you know, especially in light of the fact that, you know, we just had the Oscars and Suicide Squad, you know, won one for hair and makeup. But, you know, so there's all these memes going around about, we won an Oscar. But this is, you know, and I don't say this lightly, this is probably the first superhero movie that I've seen that I felt had genuinely Oscar-worthy performances in it. And I think that her, and I think that Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart all turned in performances that were, you know, they were next level amazing.
Yeah, the only thing is, well, two things. It's got, you know, it's the superhero moniker in front of it, and
sure,
the fact that it's open in March. So mm-hmm. it's going to be like, the Academy's not going to remember, unfortunately, but when it's Oscar time, although it would be nice. I do think it's worthy as well. And I certainly think that, you know, I mean, through all the crap that we had to deal with as far as the X-Men franchises go, like, mm-hmm. and Wolverine in particular, Hugh Jackman always rose above it. Then no one ever, like, as soon, the amazing thing about it is 17 years ago, when they cast him, nobody knew who he was, mm-hmm. but everybody knew who Wolverine was, because Wolverine was one of the most popular characters ever. And in comics, I mean, he was on every cover. And he was just used to sell the comics. I mean, he was one of the most, Marvel's probably like the most popular character. And so you've got this guy that nobody knows, cast as Wolverine. When they were making an X-Men movie, nobody cared about who was going to be Cyclops. They were caring about who was going to be cast as Wolverine. I mean, once Patrick Stewart got Xavier, everybody's like, that makes sense. Now who's going to be Wolverine? And mm-hmm. so everybody is watching the movie with sort of this anticipation on, like, how is this going to go down? The introduction of Wolverine in the first X-Men movie, I think, is one of the most perfect character introductions ever. it, that fight sequences in the bar that is just awesome at establishing him as a character. And from that moment, Hugh Jackman owned that character in a way that, you know, few actors get a chance to do that. And it's really sad to see that come to an end. And despite all the fact that, I mean, you know, that character and those movies, like that actor have been through some real shitty movies, like really like awful stuff. And to see this finale of his character, one is worthy of the character, worthy of the actor. And it's going to be hard, like, going forward, if they do want to introduce a Logan again, which they probably will, and I can't say I blame them, it's going to be difficult to fill these shoes.
Very much like with Iron Man, you know, it's you know that it will eventually get cast, but man, you know, when somebody gives a definitive performance that just captures the character so well and for so long, I mean, as an actor, he hasn't been in every single one of the X-Men movies. I mean, I know he wasn't in First Class and or Apocalypse, I think, but I think he was in all of the other ones, right?
He does appear. Doesn't he appear for a second? Logan appears for a second in First Class.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's in the the bar when Xavier and Magneto.
In that PG-13 moment.
Right, exactly. that's very true. So he is in it for a second. But it's rare for an actor to get to develop and grow a character across 8 or 9 movies over the course of 17 years.
Yeah.
So he's been very blessed, but he's, you know, he's left an indelible mark on the role, and it's going to be very hard for somebody else to step into it.
And to take this story, which is not based on any known comic story and yet fits so perfectly with the character is that's outstanding in and of itself. It's like, how did that happen? Like, usually when Hollywood thinks, oh, we know this character, we're going to make a story of our own instead of follow some classic story, it's awful. It's just like, you don't know them at all. But this is like, this is so definitive. It's almost like embarrassing to comics. Like, you didn't write anything like this.
Yeah, the writer really deserves tremendous credit for that.
I mean, I think they wrote Old Man Logan better than Old Man Logan was written.
Wow. Well, you were not a fan of that series.
I was not. And Jay just read it. I don't know how you felt about Old Man Logan, Jay, but I did not care for it.
I did not like the Miller trade. However, I've started on the next volume, and the next volume is actually pretty great. So, I agree 100%. The Miller version was very strange, and I did not like the arc that they took Wolverine through in that particular comic.
Oh, with the blind Hawkeye.
Yeah.
As his companion. It was interesting for different reasons in this movie. When I first saw Hugh Jackman with the big, thick beard and how he was talking and how he was acting, at first I thought, is that Mel Gibson? And I realized, oh, no, it's Hugh Jackman. But I loved what the kids did to him in the when he was passed out with the cutting the beard off and giving him the sideburns and the old look.
That would have been the moment to bring out the Wolverine doll. Like, one thing that bugged me was at the end when when all the kids were looking at his grave, and there's the one kid who has the Wolverine doll. I was like, where did that come from? Like, it just seems so random and unnecessary. I wish I was almost thinking he was going to put it on the grave, and I'm like, please don't do that. And so I get what the director was doing, like the juxtaposition and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't appreciate it there. I kind of would have appreciated in the moment when they shaved him and they could have pointed to him and pointed to the doll and laughed and stuff like that. So that would have been kind of funny. But I do like the self-references of it. The what are the kids calling it now? The meta of it, you know, referring to the comics, referring to the merchandising, referring to the grand adventures of it all and how like something like a lot of that didn't happen. And it's sort of reflecting – you know, in a way, Hugh, like when Logan's talking about his adventures and not great, some of them, adventures with the X-Men, Hugh's talking about his experience making the movies and with the character, I think. So there's that element of it as well there, which is, I think, kind of cool too. And it works so well. I also think I got a 70s like grindhouse vibe from the movie. I thought that was pretty interesting. Like there's the way that it's shot and everything like that. It's not in glorious like box office bonanza, like uber panorama color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It almost felt like washed out in certain parts. They definitely, especially the desert scenes.
Once again, in the Marvel movie, we see a villain that's probably not as compelling as we'd like him to be, but that's not the point of this movie.
One thing I will say as a criticism, I think that Richard Grant was criminally underused in this. He is such an amazing actor, and he had so much more that, you know, that part of the Doctor could have been done by anybody. And it just, it was really nothing. And it was, for me, it was disappointing to have somebody who's a really cool actor given such a nothing part.
Yeah. He's capable of playing more than one note.
Yeah. And you know, the bad guy was not stellar, but not as bad as plenty of comic movie bad guys out there.
Sure. In many regards, Logan serves as his own worst enemy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In this one, yeah.
Literally actually, and figuratively.
Yeah, exactly. I actually had I can tell you guys are all pretty big fans, but I didn't love the movie from where I sat. It was not one of my favorite comic book movies. And I think a lot of that is just due to my expectations, unfortunately, because my expectations had become so high for this film. When you put that trailer together with the Johnny Cash hurt, I mean, that blew me away because I'm a fan of really dark, gritty movies like The Dark Knight and I love Watchmen and I love these kind of deals. But what did you guys think about the journey that Logan goes through? Because I felt like it left something on the table in terms of his overall redemption in the end. To me, it was a little bit weak in my mind.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with that. But he is not. This is not a movie about Logan being heroic. You know, this is he is. You know, usually it's much earlier on in a character's story arc that you get the reluctant hero kind of thing. And, you know, Wolverine has always been about doing his own thing and not necessarily being a team player. But, you know, this is something where he is extremely resistant to doing the plot of this movie, you know, right. to doing the things that are going to happen in this movie. And, you know, he makes a lot of, you know, not necessarily heroic choices. Like when they're at the power generator thing out in the cornfield and, you know, he goes and snaps the guy's shotgun and is like, you know, you want to make something of it. It was at that point that I was like, I think that the farmer character is going to die, because otherwise, if he doesn't die in this movie, he is in for a world of hurt when these guys come back and Wolverine's not there, you know? I think that the character is not, it's dark and gritty and that's good, but there's also, and it's not even that he's not being heroic. He's beaten down, you know, so for me, it's kind of a six of one, half dozen of the other. He's not being the Wolverine that we know, but the fact that he's not being the Wolverine that we know is part of what makes it so painful to watch, you know, in a good dramatic sense. It's like,
well, it's like watching him walk was just painful.
Yeah.
With the limp and everything. It was just like, and you could tell because it's for those who didn't realize it, it was his bones that were killing him, basically.
Well, it wasn't his bones. It was the adamantium.
Well, the adamantium.
But what that was attached to his skeleton.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That they coated.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I was going to comment on. The theme that kind of emerged was that Wolverine was just tired. It was not necessarily maybe that he had given up on being a hero or didn't want to help people. He was just exhausted. He's dying. He's lived on longer than his normal lifetime due to this regenerative ability. And he's just kind of done. He doesn't have the physical, emotional, or mental strength. So I did think it was quite poignant at the end that he finally has this release. He's outlived all his friends and his kind of surrogate family through the X-Men. And now he's finally at peace. He gets to kind of be like a normal person and go on. So that's kind of what it struck me as, that he's not necessarily turned away from his past. He's just weary and he's just done.
And the fact that, I mean, there's a lot of truth to what he says about, you know, anybody he's ever cared about is died. I mean, we've seen them all. For 17 years, we've been watching like people, like whether it's his brother his teammates or the love of his life, or both of them, three of them, you know. Or and now like his, you know, pseudo father figure. Right. Yeah. Like it's just like and I mean, he really does believe, I think, with good reason, too. I mean, I knew as soon as they asked him, as soon as Charles said, yeah, let's go over to eat at these people's house. I'm like, oh, they're all dead.
They're all dead.
I'm not going to enjoy watching like, you know, little Mr. Terrific die. I thought like it was just going to be I thought it was going to be brutal. And it was. I mean, watching the family get slaughtered was so brutal. I was like, is this necessary? I kept thinking that, you know, but I was like, for this story, it kind of is, because it's really showing, like, I mean, yes, Laura doesn't understand it, but Logan's like, you don't want me around, because it's just something that, you know, and poor Laura, I mean, she's probably inherited that as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Actually, that leads into where I was hoping they were going to go with it, because I think the crescendo of Johnny Cash's hurt is, if I could do this all over again, I would never do this again. Right. I would try to find some way. And for me, that's what I was waiting for him to address with Laura.
Yeah.
And I felt like that would complete that arc, because I actually think the tragedy of his demise was actually really well done. And I actually really liked the journey that he went through. But I wanted him to pass along some of that knowledge, like, you can't do it like me. And the best line I think we got from him towards her was, well, you're going to have to find a way to deal with killing people. It's like, yeah, well, thanks a lot. That doesn't help that much.
And I think his dying words to her are, don't become what they made you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's pretty much, because he pretty much became what
he is. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So, I mean, that's whether or not, you know, I mean, obviously he even at the end, I mean, he is, you know, and he shows with his sacrifice to help them that, you know, I mean, it's still like kind of a, like, it's one of those mixed messages. Like, it's so cool to watch Wolverine. It's so cool to see Wolverine. It's not cool to be Wolverine.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I get it. I'm not sure where I stand on it. I really enjoyed this. I don't know where it stands as far as, you know, other, you know, great movies, superhero movies, whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm still kind of processing a lot of it. But I did enjoy it. And I think overall it was good. Like I said, it left me in much the same way that sort of like Unforgiven did, where it was like, this is a very dark tale, about a hero, heroic figure that we see as a heroic figure, but yeah, it's not, it would suck to be this guy.
I told somebody that I said, as a Wolverine movie, it's actually very good, because I do think that they maintained the, if we pictured old man Logan, we would picture him as this character. this like bitter, like just, I don't know what to do with life. I don't want to keep living. I have to take care of Professor X because I feel like I owe it to him, but I hate my life every day because of it. So as that, I thought that actually was really good, but I was hoping to just to get that as a kind of a comic book movie or as a movie that might show us what redemption might look like for a character who's had to experience all he's had to experience. That's what left me a little bit like, oh man, I wish they would have pushed that a little bit heavier. Mm-hmm. But as a Wolverine movie, it's Wolverine. That's what we're watching.
Yeah. As an X-23 movie, eh. You know, it's kind of like, but I think, and I know I saw your post after you saw the movie too, Jennifer, about mm-hmm. there being no like after credit scene. And
yes, like, and in hindsight, as soon as I posted that, I was like, well, that totally wouldn't have worked. I right. was just surprising. And and of
it's
course,
amazing
they
to
had...
me how many people I was in the theater with when the credits were running, and I'm like, I wonder if they think there is one. I'm like, you know, we constantly complain about people like, how can they leave the theater? Like right. now, I'm like thinking, I'm like, I wonder if they think there is one, and then like it ends, and they're like, well, there was no after credit, and they're mad.
It would have been ridiculous if they would have, because you know the only thing I could have thought of is if you would have saw a hand coming out of the grave or something.
No.
But which would have ruined the whole ending for me completely.
Right, right, exactly.
No, and that's true.
And you know, and as people pointed out, it had like a reverse version of that, because the movie quote unquote starts. And then it actually ends up being the final trailer, because it's a trailer for Deadpool, which was really, really well done. And I love the fact that he's having that fight right outside a movie theater that is showing Logan.
right. And Firefly is coming, apparently.
Exactly. so it was very cool. But you're right. At the end of this movie, to have the I don't know that they could have done any any trailer that would have not broken the mood very much.
No, exactly. That's true. It was, you know, it was a great ending. It was somber, and you heard people gasp when the lights, you know, came back on.
Mm-hmm. I was weeping.
Yeah, people were like, "Wow," you know, and that. That's a sign of a good movie, folks. That really is. You know, you want that. You wouldn't have ever gotten that from any other of the X-Men movies. Especially
another thing that I thought was really interesting about the way that different people experienced it. I don't have kids. The people that I know that are parents mm-hmm. told me that this movie hit them right in the daddy feels, you know, and the mommy feels in terms of relationships with children. And like you said, you know, regretting not saying, you know, leaving things unsaid and all, you know, just wanting to protect kids and not being able to. So there was I know that different people experience this movie in very different ways, depending on your age and your life experiences too.
Nope. I could definitely see that. I really definitely could see that. Do we have any last thoughts before we go ahead and start rating?
Well, real quick, one thing I wanted to talk about just real quick is I'm wondering where the future lies, because Fox is 20th Century Fox is not only doubling down, they are going X crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so there are three
extreme.
I understand there are three movies. Yeah. There are three movies in development now that are X related. One is I think Bryan Singer is still doing a follow up to Apocalypse. My understanding is also that there is a second, I think they're calling it a second sequel to Deadpool, which is going to be X-Force. And they're also doing New Mutants, which some people think it's going to pick up where these kids are. Other people, there's a lot of rumors on that. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing. So I guess maybe they're waiting to see how this movie plays out and what that's going to look like.
there's the two shows. There's Legion, which is mm-hmm. currently on FX, and then Fox is developing a TV series that's yet to be named, but we've already got pretty much of a cast, including Amy Acker. It's going to be produced by mm-hmm. Matt Nix, which I'm very excited by because I mm-hmm. love Notice. So, like, but I don't know, like, if there's a plan by 20th Century Fox to adhere to all these movies and shows and all that as closely as the MCU is being handled in terms of continuity. My guess is no, because they haven't done that already. So yeah. Like, as cool as this is, this Logan movie is, and I think it's one of the best they've ever done. I still think that, you know, I think ultimately they can rewrite and put Logan in anywhere. Like, they could recast him and put him in something tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. But this is, you know, I think that it was very much designed as a standalone, like we've, you know, been saying. It doesn't reference the other Fox Marvel properties very much at all. It is set in the future specifically to avoid, you know, continuity conflicts with anything they may do in the next 10 years. But I think that they're taking kind of the opposite strategy to what Marvel Studios has done, and rather than trying to connect things, they're trying to silo them off into their own little you know, enclaves. And you know, I think that we won't necessarily see crossover, but I don't think that that's. I think they're trying to allow their different properties to sort of develop off in their own little corners. I hope they don't end up with like three different Wolverines running around like we've got with multiple Flashes.
Like we had in the comics.
Well, that too. But, you know, I hope that, you know, they do keep them separate as opposed to DC that has, you know, multiple versions of their heroes running around on TV versus movies and stuff. Yeah, they definitely are doubling down on it, but I don't know if they're necessarily going for consistency or anything.
It's going to be tricky. I'd be curious to see what how this plays out. And like whether
Legion,
or not
Legion, I think, is just going to be completely off on its own.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I've got a bunch of them in the DVR, but from what I'm understanding, yeah, it's in the future. It's really out there. So, I think. You know, this one does sort of suggest that the X-Men movie that we saw 17 years ago, mm-hmm. that arc, that storyline of those characters, that those actors, those playing those roles, et cetera, is done. Like there's not like Hugh and Patrick are the last two, and they've both pretty much said they're done. They've both kind of opened it up where maybe if the money was right or the script was right or whatever, they could come back. But pretty much they're done. So I think anything else with the X-Men is going to be something. Well, unless, you know, if the Bryan Singer one continues, then obviously.
They were also the only ones that remembered the full continuity.
Oh, right.
When it all got rewritten. Yep.
Right.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up, and let's do our ratings now. 1 out of 5 stars. All right, Ashley, what do you think?
I'm going to go with 4.5 stars for this one. I really enjoyed it. I admired that the director and actors were willing to kind of take a smaller scale, smaller budget, and do kind of a really gritty, realistic take on the whole superhero film. I thought Hugh Jackman turned in another great performance, and if this is truly the last time we see him as Wolverine, then he went out on a great note. So was very pleased with this one.
Awesome. All right, Jay?
I'm going to agree with most of what you guys say in terms of the quality, and the acting is amazing. But for me to be still processing it and still struggling with it, I'm only going to give it 2 out of 5 stars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer?
I'm going to go with 5 out of 5. I don't think that, I think that the criticisms that we've brought up are valid. But for me, this gave me what I was hoping for in terms of it's not a flawless movie, but it is a fantastic capstone on Hugh Jackman's time and the character of Wolverine. And it gave amazing closure to, like I said, the only two characters left. I guess Magneto may remember it, but the only two characters, for all intents and purposes, that have been there and have memories of the entire 10 movie continuity. I think that it did exactly what it needed to do.
Okay. All right, Mr. Mike.
I'm struggling with this. I think right now I'm giving it a 4.5, very strong 4.5. I'm leaning towards 5 as well, but I'm not quite there yet. I think there's a couple things that I need to sort of wrap around. I'd love to see it again and take it all in, because I'm it's a powerful movie. I think it's brutal. It's intense. The performances are as good as you can ever get. And not only as good as you can get from just normal actors, but as good as you can get from two of the best actors that are working in the industry today. So like, so this is not only a great Charles Xavier, Patrick Stewart as Charles movie. This is a great Patrick Stewart performance that like better than he's ever given. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I like the script. I like a lot of the themes. Like I said, I need to, again, there's a lot to take in. So right now it stands at a 4.5.
Okay. I'm between a 4 and a 4.5. Probably closer to a 4.5. Also, I enjoyed the film a lot. There were one or two points where I was like going, got to resist from looking at what time it is. Got to resist what time it is. But it was a great film. This is the Wolverine type movie I always wanted to see. I was thinking about it while you guys were talking. You know, Wolverine in the comic books was always, when he was in the X-Men, he was violent and they let him loose a couple times, especially when he went up against the Hellfire Club the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was Wolverine alone because he was the last of the X-Men standing. And, you know, you saw what he could really do. But when Frank Miller did the first Wolverine miniseries, this is what I felt the kind of character you got in this movie. Mm-hmm. You got the violence. You let it go. And it shows how long I've been following Wolverine. I've been following Wolverine since Hulk 181 when he first appeared. And it's just – is a nice closure for the character. And yeah, he's not going to be dead forever. And, you know, I was talking to Robert Young of Borderlands last night online, and me and him were talking about the movie, and he already said, oh, I know how he's going to come back. And I said, how? And we both said at the same time how they're going to bring him back. And they'll probably just have a younger character actor play Wolverine because of it. And, you know, they'll just go on with it. So, but, you know, this is Hugh Jackman's Walk in the Sunset, you know, rumor going around that he wants to do a Deadpool movie with Ryan Reynolds.
Which would be awesome.
Oh, it would be great. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens. So we want to hear from you guys at home, of course. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break and we will be back in a moment.
I hurt myself today to see if I still...
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the Pokemon skincare and makeup line by Tony Molloy. Pokemon is all the rage right now, with the release of Pokemon Go last year and Sun and Moon as well. There is one Korean makeup company that is also releasing a fun makeup and skincare product that is aimed at adults instead of children. Tony Molloy, a Korean company with a few retail stores in the U.S., has released a line of skincare and makeup products that feature Pikachu, Bulbasaur, Squirtle, Charmander, Meowth, Jigglypuff, Psyduck, and lots of others. There are face washes, moisturizers, sheet masks, as well as blush, nail polish, eyeshadows, and lotions, all in cute Pokemon packaging. I was able to get one of the moisturizers, one that had Psyduck on it, a sheet mask with Bulbasaur, and a blush with Pikachu, and these products are great quality, and they work amazingly, and they're reasonably priced. They aren't sold in the Tony Molloy stores in the U.S., but if you get on Amazon, you can find them online, and like I said, they're really reasonably priced. So I would definitely check them out. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take this week. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Welcome, everybody. And now we've got with us for the first time on the station, we've got a representative from Frolicon, which is happening here in the Atlanta area, April 13th through 16th. Pam is here. Welcome
Hello.
To the station, Pam. Yes.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Frolicon, obviously, well, I don't even know where to begin with this, really. So tell us a little bit about the convention and how long it's been going on and what your association with is.
Okay. Well, it's a kind of an interesting juxtaposition of the, you know, fan-based geeky sci-fi convention with the kinky, fetishy leather conventions. And we take those two things and we just smush them together and we mix them up and we throw a lot of glitter on it and make everybody have a really good time for a whole weekend. So it's kind of like a big geeky love fest.
Well, doesn't everything look better in glitter anyway?
I completely agree. Absolutely.
How long have you been associated with it?
This will be our 12th year. Wow. I've been there since the very beginning. So from year one. So this will be year number 12 and year number 2 in our brand new hotel. So we are very happy to be there.
Gotcha. And the hotel is where?
It is the Sheraton Atlanta downtown. Gotcha. So nice big space, much bigger than the space we had before. So we've got some room to keep growing and adding new things every year.
They have a lot of events down there now. So that's a
huge amount. Yeah.
A lot of people who go to conventions should be pretty familiar with that hotel.
I would assume, yeah.
Awesome. Well, what kind of events, what kind of guests, what can people expect if they're interested in going to Frolicon?
Well, it's kind of all over the place. So it depends on what you're interested in, or if you're just completely have no idea what you're interested in, it's actually a great place to start. From the kinky side of things, we have classes, workshops, demonstrations, panels during the day that range from beginner level, hey, I'm brand new to this, what do I do and expect, to people who have been in the lifestyle for a very long time, who are very knowledgeable at their craft. We have a gigantic dungeon full of incredible play equipment that will host parties throughout the weekend. Some of them are very specific parties. For example, there will be times for female-only play, and then there'll be times when they are completely open to anyone at the convention who wants to go in and use the equipment. At night, we have all kinds of performances, burlesque troupes, hypnotists, magicians, performance artists, contests and games like costume contests. We have something called the Most Bankable Ass Competition, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's all over the place. You can come and enjoy and do nothing but sit there and watch people because it is the best people watching, or you can actually participate and have even better time.
Awesome. So watching is encouraged.
Absolutely.
Well, awesome.
It's a huge learning experience, I'm sure, too.
It is. It is. We try to say that we're a gateway event. I don't know if that is true 100%, but it is a very good way for people who are interested, especially in the kinky lifestyle or interested in relationship lifestyles like polyamory or things like that, to come in and get a feel for what they can expect at other conventions, but in a much less intimidating way. because it's so open and there's so many different things to see and do, you don't have to pick and choose each, you know, the kind of convention that you may or may not want to. We bring it all under one roof and lay it out there for you.
Well, it's interesting because we had talked about on our DragonCon podcast about last month how a lot of DragonCons, you know, programming and stuff has gone away from the adult-oriented material. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you guys have picked up some of that slack for people who are intros.
There's so many kids at Dragon. I can understand why. We are a 21 and over event, so we don't have that problem. We can do whatever. We encourage the adult activity.
How do you get people from, like, not walking right off the street and just, you know, hey, I want to just get look at people in weird situations and stuff?
We have a registration process. You go through, you register, you get a badge when you pay for your registration. And we have security checks at every single entrance to the first floor. We take up the entire first floor of the convention space. So in order to get to any of the programming, any of the classes or the dungeon or anything like that, you have to pass a security checkpoint with your badge. So it is, you know, we take our attendees' security and anonymity very seriously, and we do everything we can to protect that. So people who are just kind of wandering around downtown, they're not seeing anything, not unless they buy a badge and show up, and then welcome to the party.
It's a great event, and really kind of as myself, someone who is probably we'll say a novice when it comes to like some of this material. Mm-hmm. It does seem like, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, there's resources that you can go to online, but that's not the same experience. And plus that probably has more of a, not as a personal feel to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the greatest things about coming to the convention, if you are interested or new to the lifestyle, is that you get to talk to people who are at the top of their field in these particular genres of kink. People who all over the country who have years and years and years of experience, who know how to do these things and do them correctly, and are very good at showing you as well. So you can feel very safe, and you can feel very educated as well. And, you know, that's what they love doing it. That's, you know, it's what they're there for. They're there to extend all that knowledge to the next generation of kinky people. So there's definitely a personal feel that you can't get by just Googling how to do something. It's it has a much more deep impact to, you know, pardon the pun. Pardon the pun.
Dare I say it, more hands-on?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, going into this year, what are some of the events or guests that you have coming up this year that you're pretty excited about?
We have, well, for burlesque, we actually have four different burlesque troupes this year. I believe all of them except for one are from the Atlanta area. And then we have Big Mama's Burlesque from North Carolina, who comes every year, kind of finishes out our show. She's kind of our Saturday night headliner. So we always love having her and her lovely ladies. And then we have three other burlesque troupes there from Atlanta. I think we have Effie's Club Burlesque. I want to say it's maybe from Decatur, maybe? I don't have their information right in front of me, but we have Effie's Club Burlesque coming. We have Atlanta Burlesque, and then there is someone else whose name I'm drawing a complete blank. I'm sorry. But we have some performance artists from Chattanooga called Subterranean Circus. They'll do kind of circusy sideshow acts and all kinds of interesting stuff. One of their performers actually holds the world record for being able to hold the most amount of weight with her eye sockets.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's Whoa. Very, very cool. Very cool. And we have, let's see, who is new this year? For the second year, we have Chris Hannibal, who is a magician, incredible magician. And that's just the nighttime stuff. That's the stuff that's going on that are big shows and events and things like that. During the day, we have Midori, who is a world-renowned rope artist. The rope track is one of our biggest draws, and she is an amazing, amazing educator and plans on doing several classes and some other aspects, not just rope. She's planning on branching out and doing a lot of interesting panels and workshops for us that aren't in her usual genre. So that's very exciting.
Awesome. Where can people go to find out more about what's going on, registration process, rates, of course, and all that sort of thing?
Frolicon.com. Just head to our website. We are constantly updating with information about classes and things, but you can get all of your information about registration, how to book your hotel room, which is always the best way to go about enjoying the convention. It's really interesting walking down the streets of downtown Atlanta and some of the gear that you might be wearing to the convention. So staying at the hotel is the smart way to go. But you can do all of that from frolicon.com. And we have several social media sites, which are the best way to get very up-to-date information about classes and events and parties. We have huge amounts of parties that go on at the hotel that weekend. So you can also check out those social media sites, both on Facebook and on FetLife, if you have a FetLife account.
And one thing I wanted to ask, and I always love asking this from organizers of the con, because it's so, you know, I mean, there's so much work involved.
Mm-hmm.
But there are obviously you guys do it because you absolutely love it. And
absolutely.
And I'm curious, as far as this event goes, what is something that maybe happens annually, but what is something that happens or that you're looking forward to this at this event that like this is your favorite moment of Frolicon?
You know, honestly, my favorite part of the weekend is hearing the stories from people who get to experience parts of it that I never, ever see. Being one of the organizers, I spend most of my time in an office just kind of handling fires that come through the door. But hearing how much fun that people have when they come and how the overwhelming response to the weekend tends to be, for a weekend, I get to be completely and totally myself, where I have to hide those things for the rest of the year. And that is probably the best part of my weekend, knowing that we provide a place that people can come and be themselves and do things that they can't get to experience in any other way. And that is absolutely hands down my favorite part.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's, and it's a, you know, it's a great event. And the more I look about it, the more I look at it, the more I'm like, this is really cool. This is something that we don't usually cover, but yet, I can see where, you know, there is, I don't want to say a need, but definitely, I can see where this is a very helpful and healthy way to look at this sort of side of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're not particularly kinky, there are plenty of things for you to do as well. Like I said, it's not a kink-only convention. We have a game room full of board games and all the things that you would find at any normal fan service kind of convention. We have just incredible amounts of programming that will fit all kinds of genres. And it's a great place to go and see those things and not have to deal with mounds and mounds of children that are at your conventions. So, you know, if you just want a grown-ups weekend, even if you're not particularly kinky, it's a great option.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. Definitely look forward to the event. Again, it's Frolicon. It is happening in downtown Atlanta, April 13th through the 16th. And people can go to frolicon.com. We will have that as well as the Facebook groups, all that information on our show notes.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, now that we've heard all about Frolicon in April, here's some places where you can find ESO personnel at in March, some conventions coming up starting this weekend. We had Buddy on earlier to talk about Toylanta. We are very excited about that show. It is happening this weekend, so we hope to see you there. Mike and I on Saturday and Buddy will be doing the panel on Migos, but there's a lot of other cool stuff to see. Our good friends Ricky and Bambi will be performing as the Possum Kingdom Ramblers and as Radio Cult. So there'll be some music, some great music, and also
lots of great toys. So come on out and say howdy. We do not have a table at Toylanta, but we will be around. I should be around Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as well as I know Mike's going to be there on Saturday. So, and there will be plenty of other friends of the station there, too. So we're looking forward to that event. Then following that, March 18th through the 19th is the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo. That is in Huntsville, Alabama. Our sometimes co-host Lacey will be at that show. She'll be representing ESO, so she will not have a table. But please, if you see Lacey or if you see someone that sounds familiar, hear some familiar voice, please let Lacey know she's doing a great job as our occasional co-host and pat her on the back. So she's been doing a great job. And she's representing us at Huntsville. So we hope to hear her come back and talk all about that show. March 24th through the 26th is Regeneration Who. That is a Doctor Who-centric, March 24th through 26th is Regeneration Who, and that is a Doctor Who-focused convention that is in Baltimore, Maryland. Our own geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be there. In addition to blessing us, honoring us with a segment every week here on ESO, she also is a cookbook. She has a cookbook of that's Doctor Who focused, themed cookbook. So she will be promoting that as well as cosplaying and just talking about some of her movie experiences. So she's a great guest. So please reach out to her and say howdy. Also that weekend, March 25th through the 26th is the South Carolina Comic Con. That is in Greenville, South Carolina. It is a great comic focused show. We've had Robert on a few times to talk about it. It's a fun show to do. It's one of our favorites. So please come out to Greenville if you're anywhere in the surrounding areas, or even if you have to travel from afar. It is definitely worth it. A lot of great comic focused guests are going to be there. Some really big names, including Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Mark Wade. Doesn't get much bigger than those guys. So come on out and celebrate comics. And Mike and I will be there. There'll be a table for ESO. Plus, I'll have a table set up with Tiki Zombie as some of my other books as well. Peter Cutler, the artist on Tiki Zombie, will be there. So it's going to be a fun show, and it's all about comics. So come on out. And then April 28th through the 29th is Treklanta. And that is, of course, in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike and I will be hosting a panel on Saturday talking about what we've learned from Star Trek. And we want to hear from you guys. So if you're planning to go to Treklanta, please come to the panel on Saturday afternoon and let us know what you've learned from Star Trek. 50 years of Star Trek, and it's taught us as a group, and personally, it's taught us a lot. So I'm looking forward to talking to people about that. And we will be recording that for a live episode that will be airing later on ESO. So come on out and be on part of the show. April 28th through the 30th is RavenCon. That is in Williamsburg, Virginia. Angela Pritchett will be at that show as well. And she will also be at the following show in May 5th through the 7th. That is Wholanta, and that is in Atlanta, Georgia. It used to be called Timegate, and it used to be Memorial Day weekend. But they changed the date, changed the name, but it's still a great convention. It's still got some of the best Doctor Who guests, and it still has Mike, myself, Jennifer Hartshorn, who's on this show, will be there. Angela Pritchett, as I mentioned, will be there. A lot of friends of the station are going to be there. We always have a great time. It's almost like a little mini ESO family reunion, and also some great, great, great Doctor Who guests and great talk. Great fandom talk about Doctor Who. So definitely look forward to that show. So that's in May. That's all we've got coming up between March, April, and into May. So if you've got a convention that you want to rave about, like FrolicCon, please reach out. We'd love to have you on the show. If you've got another convention that experience that you've just got to tell everybody about, please contact us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our crew from all around the country for being here tonight. Of course, Jay, you've made it, sir.
Yes. It was good to be here. It was a pleasure, and I appreciate you guys inviting me.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yes. Check out our podcast. We do the Story Geeks podcast, which is on Podbean and iTunes, or you can check us out at the Reclamation Society. We have a Star Wars fan film, so go to www.reclamationsociety.org. It's actually easier to spell than you think. And check us out.
We'll have links, of course, up on our show notes.
Thank you.
And Ashley, just want to say thank you. You've been knocking it out this last 2 weeks with your movie segment, and you know it's going to be coming to us every week. We are so happy to have you part of this.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun to come on and do these reviews, and I appreciate the chance to kind of do some more for the station with the weekly What to Watch feature and the reviews on the website. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to lots of good stuff in the future, hopefully.
Oh, hopefully. Hopefully we'll have good quality like this stuff. But, you know, we have to worry about next week's movie anyway.
That's right, yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
Exactly. And, of course, the lovely Jennifer Hartshorn.
Thank you, thank you. It's always fun to revisit the mothership over here.
Oh, definitely. Glad to have you up. And what's going on with MCU?
We are currently getting caught up on episodes, some that have been recorded that I have not gotten out, but it works out well because S.H.I.E.L.D.'s on a break right now, so we'll stretch that out. We do are going to be doing one on Iron Fist, which is going to be dropping in a couple of weeks now, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Definitely.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yep. And of course, Mr. Mike, you made it through another one.
I did, and as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
I do. A friend of mine, who is responsible for much great artwork, including the gorgeous cover of Tiki Zombie number 3, Robert Jimenez. He is a friend of the station as well. He's got a Kickstarter that's ending as of this recording in about 12 days, so a little over a week. So as people are listening to this, you can still get in on it. It is a coloring book. And if you are a big fan of things like Madballs or Garbage Pails Kids or The Worst or anything like that, you're going to love this. It is a coloring book called Weird Ass Faces. It's a really fun book full of, yes, you guessed it, weird ass faces. So check it out and help support him.
That is awesome. My shout out actually goes out to someone who really pulled our butts out of the fire this last week. For those who haven't noticed, the Earth Station One podcast website has been down almost 5 days because of corrupt code and just lack of a good host. Not me host, but as host of the...
I'm like, what are you saying?
Hosting of, you know, the web nature. And we, you know, had some very bad issues, and we had basically the website go kablooey. I want to give a huge shout out to Amber Hansford, and she saved our bacon. Amber, of course... A lot of folks up here know her as the director of the Filk track of Dragon Con. But in her real life, she's also a programmer, and she helped us out tremendously throughout the weekend and through, you know, evenings, me and her working on, you know, coding and, you know, what is wrong with it on the phone with customer service. And it was headaches back and forth, but we have a brand new design up for the website. We have, you know, a lot faster moving website on top of it, more streamlined. We're still, you know, ironing out a lot of kinks with it, but, you know, go check out the new esopodcast.com. It's definitely worth checking out, and, you know, it's going to be a lot of good stuff going on there. I have lots of plans talking with her of things to how to improve the site and, you know, just where we're going to go from here. So thank you so, so much. We'd be dead in the water. You wouldn't even be hearing this if it wasn't for her, basically. So we all have to give a round of thanks. Mm. And speaking of thanks, we're going back to the movies once again next week, where we are going to be looking at King Kong Skull Island. And it's going to be interesting. I've heard good and bad and iffy with the previews. Judy Ori looked at me and said, I am not going to see that movie with you.
Wow.
So it's going to be a fun one to go to this weekend, and it should be a lot of fun. But of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com, or of course 404-963-9057. That is our call-in number. Please call us in. Speaking of begging and pleading, please also, folks, as we like to say on the show, you know, please help support the station through the ESO Amazon store, where we have all kinds of cool geeky stuff. And if you don't see what you want up there, you know what? Just go to Amazon. Real easy. ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon. Click on that link, or that, put that address in. You just have to bookmark it. From there on, every time you go to Amazon, you give us a little bit of spending money for the, you know, the new server, which we're going to have to be getting now because of what happened this last week. So, you know, folks, we really do appreciate all the support we've gotten, and please definitely continue doing so. We can't do it without you. And for that, my name is Mike Faber. We will talk to you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kinds of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you can also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is ESOPodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.